Welcome to a new What's Up Welland that has us returning to the Welland Public Library. Two new-to-the-show guests are joining me today, Eric DeBroth and Heather Duench-Dye, here to highlight two aspects of the library's collections, local history, and what's new within the Library of Things. With the Welland Public Library celebrating a 200th anniversary this year, what a perfect time to look into the history that's stored in branch and online. So, let's get to it. So what's up, Welland? Where the Welland Public Library is back on the show. And why feature one guest, one voice, one perspective when we can have two? Joining me today is Eric DeBroth, Local History and Digitization Associate, and Heather Duench-Dye, Technical Services Associate, both with our Welland Public Library. Eric, Heather, thank you so much for joining me. I don't know about you, but I'm excited to dig in because there's always so much to learn about what is in the library, what goes on at the library. So Heather, let's start with, as a technical services associate, new collections are in your realm. That bumps up against that term, library of things. What does that term even mean? How does that term influence your role with WPL?
So Library of Things is a newer collection that a lot of libraries are getting. And basically, put simply, it's stuff. Traditionally, libraries have been books, but now we're sort of branching out into other items. So it could be items that, you know, they're costly, or maybe you only need to use it once, or you want to try it before you buy it. You can come down to the library, see what we have, and check them out.
So, Eric, if we jump over and switch into your lane at the library, you being local history and digitization, what does that look like? How is your day spent at the library? If research is a component of that, what do some of those requests look like and sound like?
Sure. Well, thanks for having me, Paul. I usually start my shift with like data entry, and that's like getting the daily Welland Tribune obituaries. And I enter them into our genealogical database, which is available on our website. And it's just an index of names from various sources. It consists mostly of like birth, death, and marriage announcements from the Tribune, and also names that appear in local books in our collection. So if you search a name, it helps you find the original place it appeared. And that's the source of most of my research requests as well. People search that database at home. They find an entry they want, and then they email me. And I find it for them in our microfilm, and I send them the image of the article. Sometimes it's not in the database, but they know the obituary did appear in the Tribune, and they know when the person died, so like I can look it up that way too. Sometimes they don't have the date of death, that makes it even harder. I'm not able to search through like months and years of the paper for one article. It would take too much time. Unfortunately, with microfilm, you can't search by keyword. But generally, so what else is in my day? I do digitization of like films, cassettes, photographs, which goes on our website. Research requests can be a lot of things, like Mark Alanoff. He writes in the Tribune the historical articles, and he usually sends me requests to get all the material I can on a subject so he can write the article. I had a really interesting request just a few weeks ago where a lady emailed me saying she was a valedictorian at the Welland High School in the 40s, so she must have been in her 90s, and she wanted if I could find the valedictory article she'd written in the yearbook. So we had most of the yearbook, so I was able to find that, but I also got all the other articles I could find with her name in it, and she was really happy that I could go above and beyond for her, you know? And so the best part of my job is when everyone's so grateful for my effort, even when I'm not able to find what they wanted, but they're so happy. So it's like the best part.
So Heather, with collections, it's something that from when we spoke with the library previously, they're constantly growing, changing. What are some of the newest collections? And of those new collections, are there any that you are so, so excited to talk about?
Our Library of Things has been really growing over the last probably year and a half to 2 years. One thing I wanted to mention that it's not new, but we've reintroduced it for this year, is our Seed Library. So that was launched March 1st. Patrons can request up to 10 packets of seeds, and they can be requested at any of our branches, and we can send them in our interbranch transit. And it's just a great way to get Welland growing, really. We've also really expanded our games and puzzles. Last summer, we added some giant board games. So we have giant Jenga, we have a giant chess set, and a giant snakes and ladders, and it's really fun. Another big collection that we've started getting are called Wonder Books. And so that is, so that's when your child can listen to the story being read to them as they read along as well. So we have picture books and like children's chapter books for those. And at the end of the story, I guess there are sort of like little book club questions so they can think about what they've read. And I've heard a lot of positive feedback about those, that parents are really excited, and those have been going out a lot. Another big collection, we've added a toy library. So those are also cost prohibitive toys. A lot of them are like STEM or educational toys. We added in a children's metal detector. There's a children's microscope. So everything's kind of plastic, and it's got little fake slides that they can look at and sort of analyze. We have lots of robotics kits. I know there's a Mars rover that they get to put together and use, and then lots of coding kits as well. For adults, we recently added 10 iPads. So that's pretty exciting. And they all go home. And the other big one that we added last summer was VR headsets. So they are available at the main branch and at Seaway Mall. They don't go out of the library, but you can book a 45-minute time slot to come in and use it.
So you just said these VR headsets, which sound so cool, those don't go out of the library. But that fantastic list of the iPads, the Mars rover, the STEM sets, are those things that can walk out the library door with people? Do they get to use them, engage with them in the comfort of home, or are these things that, are they booking library space to use this stuff?
No, everything other than the VR headsets gets to go home with you. So you can take it home for a week, play with it, and bring it back.
How fantastic is that? So, Eric, if we are switching back to some local history talk, what are, so you, in that story you shared, you spoke to looking through yearbooks from the 40s. What are some of the other items that that comprise this the local history section?
Well, it's a good time to do this podcast because just last week we revamped our website for the local history section, and I recommend going there. It's wellandlibrary.ca, and there's a tab at the top that says local history, and it has a much better overview of what we have in our resources than it used to, which people didn't really know what we had. So I spent a lot of time working on it the past year, I'd say. I'll just mention the areas that get the most use. We have two microfilm reader stations and a microfilm cabinet with a bunch of old newspapers and books on the microfilm. The highlight is the Welland Tribune, the most issues we have from 1872 up to the present day. The local paper is usually the best resource for learning about the history of a city. It covers most areas of daily life, and it's used a lot for genealogical purposes. But I find it interesting to read about these big historical world events from a Welland perspective, as well as see how attitudes and ideas have changed over the decades. As I do research requests, I read through all of it, and by osmosis, I kind of just take it all in. We also have the books in our local history collection, of course. That might be what comes to mind for most people, our local history book collection. They're available at the main branch, and they're reference materials, which means they can't be checked out of the library, but are meant for in-house use, as they're not usually replaceable. The books consist of like local authors and are about subjects relevant to Welland and Niagara. Another heavily used collection is our Omeka website, which is available as a historical images underneath our local history tab. That's a big part of my job, digitizing old photographs, slides, documents, etc. I scan these materials and I publish them on our site, adding in the metadata, which helps find them findable in searches. This takes up a lot of my time. Right now, I just finished uploading about 1,500 slides. It took a long time. They were just sitting in a binder in the storage room, like completely forgotten about, and no one knew we had them. So I scanned them all. They're all online now, and you can search them by title and stuff, and they're all into different subjects, the library and all these other things around the city. So that was exciting. And we have a lot of things, clippings, folders, access to Ancestry with a subscription. And again, if you just go to our website and go under local history, it'll show you everything that we have.
Heather, with you mentioned before, I'm going to jump back to the VR headsets as an entry point, let's say. So you mentioned that those are available at the main branch and the Seaway Mall branch. Are collections specific to each of the three branches, or do the same collections, are the same collections available everywhere? Are they transferable? How, what's the decision-making behind what goes where?
Right. So most things do live downtown at our main branch. The board games, the puzzles, the wonder books, they do float amongst all three of our branches. So if someone takes one out at the main branch, if it gets returned to, say, the Seaway Mall, it will live there, kind of thing. So that keeps the collection fresh and everyone can sort of see different titles all the time. One thing that Seaway Mall has that nobody else has is there are in-library use Lego sets. So I think there's like a Lego wall that the kids can sort of check out the bin of Lego and just play with in the library. Yes, and then the other collections as well can be transited between our branches. So we have interbranch transit twice a week, and you can request it and we will send it over there.
Pretty cool that these very, very engaging items basically travel across the city and meet people where they need to get them, where it's most convenient.
Yes, for sure. It's kind of funny to see like things like items from our instrument library going out the door. So, you know, the guitars get moved to Diamond Trail or wherever somebody needs one.
Eric, going back in the local history direction. So you're talking history. I mean, for a lot of people, when you hear the word history, that first thought is museums deal with history.
Oh, yeah.
What is the difference between a museum and a library when it comes to local history?
Well, what most people think of probably when it comes to a museum are like artifacts and like exhibits. Libraries, you kind of think of maybe books for the most part. And there are archives as well, where they have like documents, photographs, maps. So that's generally speaking, though, because, you know, at the library, we do have some old artifacts, some maps, lots of documents and so on. I know the Welland Museum is building a small library for researchers. I don't know if it's complete yet. I remember they were building it when I was there. There's definitely blending of these types of materials between institutions, and there's no hard and fast rules, especially recently with the internet and digitizing things and providing it online. But now into the future, there's going to be more partnerships and collaborations between libraries, archives, and museums. I know there's a desire at the Welland Library to increase collaborations with the Welland Museum, mostly in programming. Anyways, the main differences between maybe museums and libraries, to me, is like access and interpretation. So you could argue that like a library's main goal has been to provide access to information for everyone. So let's say we have in our collections the Tribune on microfilm and books about the history of Welland and plenty of old photographs. So working at the library, my way of thinking is, how do I get this to people who want it or need it, and what barriers are there that prevent people from accessing, and how do I remove those barriers? So to me, it's all about access, and solutions could be promoting the material so that people know we have it, providing instructions on how to operate a machine, digitizing photos and putting them online so people can easily find them. On the other hand, you wouldn't really see an exhibit at a library the way you would at a museum. So the museums help to provide context and interpretation of a subject that in a way that you don't really see a library doing. My attitude is that I can help you find what you need, but it's up to you how you would use it or interpret it. A museum could probably help fill that role if you need it. Yeah.
Heather, you spoke about how funny it is to see instruments go out the door and get moved from one branch to the other. With the collections that you have put together, with the collections you know that exist at the Welland Public Library, is there one in particular that just is so fantastic that you're just so happy to know exists? You're happy to see people engaging with. Do you have an absolute favorite?
It's still books, number one for me. I'm a big reader, so I still love the books. But for like the Library of Things and the other items, I do like the board games and the puzzles. I think that's a really great collection to have because, you know, they cost money too. And a lot of times, especially with puzzles, you put it together once and you look at it for a few days and then what? You know, so at least this way you can bring it back and get out another one.
You could say that about books too.
That's true.
You read a book once and like, I don't need it anymore, you know, for the most part.
I'm with you, Heather, still on the just libraries are places for books. The collections are fantastic, but yeah, who doesn't love a good book? With the collections, so you spoke so much on the collections that are here now, and they span quite a range. Are there any that are on the horizon that you can give us a peek at, or is it one of those stay tuned, more will get shared as they come to light?
No, I have a few things I'm currently getting ready for the shelf to get out there. Some really not necessarily fun things, but they're really interesting. So we are getting carbon dioxide monitors. So they'll go out for a week. You can monitor your air quality, your humidity, and your atmospheric pressure and temperature at home. Another one is radon monitors. I think people have been asking for those. So those will actually go out for 6 weeks because you need to do it for a longer period of time. But I was looking into those myself, and I didn't realize that radon is the second leading cause of lung cancer in Canada. So I think that's a really good one to have.
If we are leading into safety, it's safety trumps fun, yeah, perhaps.
Well, for sure.
Well, it's fantastic that the library is thinking along those lines, that it's not just about...
Yeah, and actually I have one more to mention as well. They're called C pens, the letter C. And it's a little tool that's a reading assistant. So it looks like a little pen and you can turn it on and you just scan the text with it. So if you're reading a book or, you know, it's good for students if they're studying, they scan the text and it reads it out loud. So it's also really good for people with learning disabilities that maybe have trouble reading. It'll help them as well.
What a brilliant accessibility tool. Eric, I'm going to lean on you to help lead us out of this episode. And this is a timely conversation to have because this is the year that the Welland Public Library is celebrating 200 years. What are you aware of in these celebrations? And what do you know about how this is going to be, this significant milestone is going to be marked?
Well, first of all, it's really, really cool that our library can make a claim to being that old. Like 200 years is a very long time. I think it's something to be proud of for all Wellanders. I think it says something about the importance of education and knowledge in this region. So to be clear, we weren't the Welland Public Library in 1824. At the very beginning, it was the Welland Library Company. It was a group of people in this area that wanted access to a lending library. So they created one amongst themselves where they would have to pay a share or donate books to become a member. In 1858, the library company merged with the Mechanics Institute of Merrittsville to become the Welland Mechanics Institute. And in 1896, we officially became the Welland Public Library, and we were funded with tax dollars. And just because it's interesting, I'll just briefly go over the changes in Welland as well. People I think listening might be interested.
Absolutely.
It was first a shanty town known as Aqueduct in 1829, due to an overground aqueduct built here due to the first Welland Canal. The population grew a bit, and work on the second Welland Canal led to, in 1844, becoming the village of Merrittsville, named after William Hamilton Merritt, the father of the canal. In 1858, the village was renamed to the village of Welland, after the county of Welland and the Welland River. In 1878, it became the town of Welland, and in 1917, it became the city of Welland, which is what we know it today. And if you're wondering where the name Welland came from, many place names in Niagara originated in Lincolnshire in England, chosen by Colonel John Graves Simcoe. He was the first lieutenant governor of Upper Canada. And the Welland River was named specifically after the River Welland in Lincolnshire. And I Googled the etymology of the name Welland and what it means. It's believed to come from the Old English words wael and landa, which refers to a riverbank. So there you go. So back to the library. The first meeting of the Welland Library Company would have been Saturday, November 27, 1824. They met at a schoolhouse near Brown's Bridge. This is in the southwest part of Welland, at the very foot of South Pelham Road, where it meets the Welland River. And so November 27, 2024 will be a Wednesday. And we have plans to mark the occasion that day with events, but nothing is set in stone just yet. I do believe the main event will be related to a time capsule, and you'll hear more about that leading up towards the event. And there's going to be speakers and refreshments that day too. But anyways, the details will be worked out soon. And we're also doing activities throughout the year to celebrate. Currently, people can vote for one of 8 historic library images that will go on a special 200th anniversary library card. They can vote with a paper ballot at our branches or online on our website. Although when this podcast goes out, it might be over by then, but it's been a month that people can vote. There will be library swag with historic imagery available for sale as well. And we just put our library timeline on our website. You can find it under the local history tab. I just also want to mention one more thing. I just digitized about 10 8mm films that were in our storage room, and those are going to be put on our YouTube channel, and they're very exciting. The library used to have a film department renting out films and projectors. So that maybe that was kind of a library of things back then. But when VHS came, those probably became antiquated. So I don't know when they got rid of all the films. But they did save the local films related to Niagara and Welland. And that's what I scanned through a film digitizer last month. Some are films of the library and some are the Rose Parades in the 70s. My favorite is the 1958 Welland Centennial. It's about an hour long and they filmed various areas of the city as they celebrate 100 years since they became the Village of Welland in 1858. So I'm excited to publish those this year on a YouTube channel and please subscribe to it. I anticipate in the next few months they'll begin appearing. I looked myself for these old Welland videos online. There just isn't much out there. So I think it's going to fill a void there and people are going to be excited to see 50 to 70 years ago what it was like in Welland. And that's about it.
It's exciting to hear that the celebration is not just a one-day affair, that there's going to be. There are a lot of materials to acknowledge this.
Oh, yeah.
This 200 years, and from now until November, and even past November, there's so much history to delve into and celebrate, and I cannot thank the both of you enough for bringing awareness of our local history, awareness of our new collections, to today's conversation.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Happy to be here.
Thank you, Heather and Eric, for making another podcast visit to the library an interesting and educational experience. These conversations never fail to amaze me in terms of getting to find out how much and how far-ranging the library collections really are. So, for people who think they know what's in any of our three library branches, you'd be surprised if you paid one of them a visit. For all of our previous library guest chats and all past and future episodes, check out engagewelland.ca/podcast and make sure you come back next week for a new guest.